Hi, everybody. This is David Wood, and welcome back to Wood on Words, the podcast for all things writing and publishing. I'm having a weird day today. I have tried to start this podcast like four times, and the first time my voice cracked like I was going through puberty. Then the next few times, I just kept saying very strange things. So I'm just going to treat this like a first draft, and I'm going to talk, and hopefully you will forgive me if I don't sound very polished. I mean, let's be real. How polished do I ever sound? Anyway, things are good. Have finally finished up Mystic, which is book two in the Myrmidon Files series. Got that wrapped up, proofed, all that good stuff, uploaded to various vendors that are publishing it, of course. And as I was working on it, I've also been working on putting together a really cool checklist for pre- and post-launch strategies that I want to use as an episode of the podcast. But given that I'm trying to get back into some of the indie publishing success-related stuff, I wanted the episodes to sort of be in a logical sequence, so we're not quite ready for the launch thing. So I won't get into all the different things that I did just yet. But I will say that's coming. I've got a whole bunch of stuff, got some feedback from some other authors, so I think that's going to be a really cool episode. So that is the big thing that I've been working on, is making sure I've been doing all the little things surrounding a launch. The book is not officially launched. It's gone through all the publishing channels, but the newsletter is about to come out and make all the announcements. But not there just yet. It's just ready to roll. And the official launch will come in the next couple of days. Aside from that, working on the same projects that I've been talking about, the next Jake Crowley, and doing the wrap-up stuff on the pirate story, Neptune's Key. So that is the fun writing and publishing stuff that's been happening with me. And, you know, interesting, having wrapped up and published this book, it got me thinking. Last week in one of the publishing forums in which I take part, somebody asked about falling into a post-publication depression and how they handle it. And I realized that I don't do that. My depression tends to come in what a lot of people call the mushy middle of the book. Even if it's outlined and I know where it's going, there's this area right at the midpoint where I'm just sick of the book. It doesn't matter how excited about it I am. I just reach a point where I think it's terrible, that this is the book where people are going to realize that I'm the worst writer in history. I know some of you have already figured that out. And I go through the little whiny, I just don't want to type stuff. That's my difficult area. Once I finish a book, I feel so good about doing it. Part of it is pride. A lot of it is just relief. I have this weird psychology where I tend to focus on the end of a task, and I'm still not very good at enjoying it on a consistent basis. And plus, I just tend to overload myself with projects, keep a lot of things going. So even when I finish a book, my mind's already on the other irons that I have in the fire. So, for example, Monday, when all the edits were in and the books were formatted and uploaded to all the channels, I did knock off early, about 1 o'clock, and I just chilled out and watched reruns of Battlestar Galactica, and then next day I was back to work. So maybe I need to do a better job of treating myself. I do sometimes celebrate a book with going out getting a massage or something like that, something fun, but I probably should do a better job of celebrating. But enough about that. Let's talk about this week's topic, because there's a lot we want to cover. This topic is best practices in indie publishing. Now, let's go ahead and get a few things out of the way first. For one, there's going to be a lot of very basic beginner-oriented information in here. Hopefully, if you're not a beginner, you'll still glean some value from the post. But that's how it's going to be. Also, there's no dictionary definition, I don't think, of best practices when it comes to indie publishing. Some of these things are subjective. So for our purposes today, we're going to define best practices as the things that indie authors can do that are generally a good idea and that have generally proven effective for indie authors who've enjoyed some commercial success. And obviously, there are no guarantees here. We can do all of the things we've discussed on this podcast, and sometimes it won't happen for us. But I do believe that, in general, the things we're going to talk about today are going to improve your chances. Now, it starts with obvious stuff. Produce a quality product. First of all, pay attention to your craft. And hopefully you can go back, if you haven't already listened, to the very first episode where we talked about the importance of craft and went into great detail. If you haven't, go back to episode one. If you go to the woodonwords.com site, you'll see in with today's episode, there's a link that will take you back there. But anyway, pay attention to craft and a few examples of what you can do when you're attending to your craft. Take part in writing workshops, get good critique partners, and read widely. Obviously, there's more we could say, but those are the basics that we've covered in greater detail previously. Know your genre and your subgenre, and this begins with making your decision about what you're going to write and continues with your marketing and promotional strategies, your book cover design, your product description. Lots of important stuff is going to be grounded in knowing what is working for indies in your subgenre. Now, when I say it can impact what you're going to write, I'm not saying go write something you hate just because you think it will sell. If you're anything like me, and I'm sure I've said this before, there are probably multiple genres that you enjoy reading and would enjoy writing, and within those, some of those genres are either going to be underserved, meaning that there aren't a lot of people writing for that niche, and you might be able to get some visibility with fewer sales, or maybe there just aren't a lot of books in there, but it appears there are a lot of readers that are hungry for that particular subgenre. So look for what appears to be the convergence point of your areas of interest, in which there are probably many, and potential sales. So as you do that, make sure that the work you're writing fits the tropes of that genre. You can subvert some, but generally speaking, your mass market readers, they aren't looking for too much in the way of new and different or super unique. A lot of mass market success comes from comfort food, literary comfort food, writing more of the same. So understand the tropes. Understand what it is that readers love about the genre. Look at the positive reviews of the successful indies. Find out what they're enjoying and give them more of the same, and be wise about the things you do subvert. You can make some changes, but again, understand what works in the subgenre and give readers what they're looking for. Have a good book cover is important. You would think this would go without saying, but take a look at a site like lousybookcovers.com and you'll see that you do need to discuss having good book covers. It's not as apparent. Or some people are just terrible judges of what makes for a good book cover. Or they do a confirmation bias thing where deep down maybe they kind of know their book cover isn't any good, but they post it on Facebook and say, "What does everybody think of this cover?" And there will always be some people who tell you what you're doing is good. So maybe they've gotten bad advice or advice from the wrong people. Maybe they're getting feedback from graphic designers who are great for Photoshop but don't actually know how to make a book cover that sells, because there are some specific things that happen in book cover design that aren't pertinent to other areas of design. So what you want to do is emulate the best-selling indie authors in your subgenre. And I emphasize indie authors because the reality is, there, if you're Dan Brown, you can have a terrible book cover and your books will still sell. Sometimes your name and your reputation and your previous work will make your book sell even if you're not doing the right thing. So don't necessarily look to the traditionally published authors. You can, but, you know, take that with a grain of salt. Also look to see maybe an author is with a small publishing house that has a great niche market and people snap up anything from that publisher. Maybe their books are not necessarily going to be the best examples. They can, but really look at the people who are doing it on their own in your subgenre and enjoying success. Important thing to remember, your book cover is a sales tool, not an artistic reflection of the contents of your book. And this is something that I've seen authors complain about again and again. This book doesn't the things on this cover don't reflect the book, or they're trying too hard to shove too many elements into their book cover to make sure that it's picking up bits and pieces of their book that they think is important. Most of the time, those authors are not selling very well. I've seen things where, you know, somebody, there's a great book design available, and realistically, unless you can afford a high-quality custom cover, you're going to have to make do with pre-made covers, with the stock images that are available, things like that. And there'll be a fantastic cover, and the person will say, no, my protagonist has a tattoo on her left shoulder. Or, no, my protagonist has longer hair than that. If it's a great book cover, readers don't care about those minute things. Don't sweat the small stuff. You want a good cover that is enticing to the readers, that gives people a feel of the spirit of your book and the genre in which it's written. Don't pass up on an amazing cover or even a good cover because of little nitpicky stuff. And don't try to force the design. Now, if you're just beginning your publishing journey, there's a very good chance that you can't afford top-notch custom covers from the best artists. That's okay. One of the things that's different today than the circumstances I was in when I started out, or even where indies were a few years ago, there are lots and lots of very high-quality, professionally done book covers that are pre-made covers you can get for a very reasonable price. I think I've seen good ones for as little as $45. Some, you know, might be regularly higher priced, but they're frequently doing sales. You're going to have to wade through a good bit until you find one that looks like a good fit. But just Google search pre-made book covers, because there are so many that are doing good quality work, and the price is coming down all the time because of competition in the marketplace. There's really no excuse for having a bad book cover. And if you don't even have $45 to spend right now, and if you don't have $45 right now as you're listening to this, start putting away your pocket change. See if you can skip a Starbucks or a fast food. Look for tiny corners to cut. It really won't take that much time to save up for a good cover, and that is something that's just essential. But get a good book cover that looks professionally done. Next thing to consider, your product description. Some people call this the blurb. Some call it the synopsis. Some call it the back cover copy. Basically, this is what's going to appear on your product page of your book, be it on Amazon, Kindle, Nook, iBooks, Kobo, wherever. And there are some things you need to remember. First of all, it's an ad. It's not a summary of your book. Don't summarize everything that happens. You're writing ad copy to entice people to look further, to maybe look at your sample, or to just grab your book. Open it with a hook. The first line that's really killer, and just a couple that I wrote down off the top of my head. One of Willie Meikle's books, The Valley, is terrific. The tagline is, "A lost world has been found again, and no one is getting out alive." I really like that one. With one of my recent books, Primordial, "Sometimes the legends are true," and it's a monster book. So, you know, get some help with it, but come up with a cool, memorable, enticing first line. After that, you know, keep your description snappy, not over long. Focus on what the story is about and what the characters will face. And very important, this is not the place to load up on backstory. I've seen people writing in a fantasy world think they need to tell all the history that led up to the events of this book. I've seen writers in many genres think they need to tell all about the character and what's going on in his or her life before the events of this book. Don't do that. Focus on what's happening right now. Tell the people about the story they're going to read. And this is another instance where you can learn from the best-selling indie books in your subgenre. Next thing to consider is proofreading and editing. Now, a couple different kinds of editing you can get, and people often say editing, and they mean one of two things. Sometimes they mean both. But there's content editing, which is someone taking a look at the way you've crafted your story, the way you've developed your characters, looking for inconsistencies, looking at plots and subplots and things like that. They're looking at the story writing itself. And then there's proofreading, which is looking for errors, typos, spelling errors, using the wrong word, things like that. Both are important. And one of the great things is, if you have the money to spend, you can actually hire some of the same editors who are freelancing for big five publishing companies. A lot of people don't realize that these big publishing houses, while they might have people working in-house doing this sort of thing, a lot of them are contracting out both their cover design and their content editing and proofreading. And I personally know some indies, many of whom used to be traditionally published or hybrids doing both, and they are using their traditionally published editors on the side to edit their indie books. And so more and more, as we become more professional and have the resources to to make our books the best, there's becoming less and less difference between an independently published book and a traditionally published book. Now, I perfectly understand that not everybody has the money to hire the best of the best. I've been there. I had no money when I started out. I think it cost me $85 to set up my first paperback on Lulu.com or some amount of money, and that was a huge, huge stretch for me. So, I'm going to give you some ideas for making your book as clean as you can without hiring a professional editor, with the understanding that I am not advising you to skip out on the editing, but just saying that I get that the money isn't always there, and I don't think you have to wait to begin your career until you can hire a hugely expensive editor. So here are some things you can do to make it as good as make your book as good as it can be. First of all, before you make your final pass over the manuscript, change your font and the font size on your screen, and maybe even print it out. There's something about making it look different than the manuscript you've seen so many times, or even putting it in a different format by putting it on paper, that it sort of changes your mindset. It makes the book a little bit unfamiliar subconsciously, and it helps you catch mistakes. Read the book aloud to yourself. This is a big one. There's something about reading aloud. Again, maybe it uses a different part of your brain, slightly different cognitive process, but that too will help you catch mistakes. Read the book page by page, but starting with the back page. And that's a weird one, but what it does is it pulls you out of the plot. You don't get absorbed in the story. You're focusing on the words, and you'll catch more mistakes that way. Some people like to use a text-to-speech program, and I think there are some that are free, or depending on what kind of software you have or what kind of computer you have, there are some that might come with it. But if you have a machine read the book back to you, there again, you'll catch mistakes. When the machine doesn't know how to pronounce a word or botches it or says something that's obviously wrong, you'll be alerted, and you can catch some of those mistakes in that way. You can use a software program like Grammarly, although that's going to cost you money. Microsoft Word has some built-in stuff. But let's be very clear. Even with one of those programs, you need to understand the rules, because what a program like Grammarly will do is say, this is possibly the wrong word, or here's a punctuation error, but they're not always correct. So you need to look at it and evaluate it and make that decision. So it's a tool, but you know, certainly not a perfect tool by any stretch. Very, very important. Get as many eyes on your manuscript as you can. Don't just get one or two, especially if you're trying to go without an editor, which again is not ideal. We're just trying to be real world here. The more people you can get to proof it, the better. The more chances they'll catch all the mistakes. And do remember that if you do publish a book that has some errors, it is not the end of the world. As long as you've done a good job and it only has a few, you can always go back and make some corrections. Yet, and I can't say this enough, it is not ideal. And I am not encouraging you to skip the editing process, but if you have to, get lots and lots of people to look at your book. Probably not all at once, but in stages maybe. So some people can catch the errors that others didn't. They can catch corrections you might have accidentally introduced when correcting other things. And your street team might be a good resource. There might be some people in there who are good at catching errors or good at story editing, especially if they read a lot in your genre. And then as you improve, as you get some money, start networking with other authors to find people who do good work and who are affordable, and you'll find them at every scale. You might even luck into some that are just getting started and are willing to work for less money. And there's a site, for example, the Kbord's Yellow Pages is a place you can look for people who are offering their services. Next thing to take a look at are mentors. And I'm not saying start emailing successful indie authors and say, will you please mentor me? I'm talking more about you learning inductively from the things that they do. Look for somebody in your genre or subgenre who's doing well, and look at how they go about their business. Read their books and outline their story structure. Learn from their product description, their pricing strategies. Model yourself if they have great book covers. See who the book cover designer is, and maybe you can afford them. If not now, maybe someday. See if they've written blog posts or articles, or have given interviews where they talk about their practices and give advice. Some of them will actually take part in forums and give out advice that way, although that's becoming less and less. I'm seeing that a lot of the successful indie authors are starting to stay away from a lot of these forums because of the reaction that they get from some people when they try to give advice, like what we're talking about today. And a lot of today's advice comes not necessarily from me personally, but from people I know who are enjoying good success. So, understand what they're doing and try to emulate it. I'm a big fan of podcasts. If you want to learn more about business strategies that work, marketing, things like that, look at The Creative Pen, the Self-Publishing Formula, Sci-Fi and Fantasy Marketing Podcast, and I'll put up links to these on the website. The Craft, you can listen to a podcast like Writing Excuses or the Roundtable Podcast. There are lots and lots of writing podcasts out there, many more than I have time to listen to, so I just listen to a few favorites. But there's a lot out there. If you like audio especially, podcasts are a great source. And that's a great way to be mentored, again, inductively, where the people are giving away their advice for free and you don't have to really demand their time. Now, on the subject of advice, I want to encourage everyone to be very careful about the advice that you take, because there's a lot of it available out there. There are a lot of people who are charging for their advice, and in some cases, the advice they're charging for isn't very good. In other cases, the kind of advice they're charging for, you can get for free in other places. I mean, people like Mark Dawson, who are very successful, are giving advice away for free on podcasts and in articles. And the other thing is that some of the people who are giving advice, they aren't actually making money selling fiction. So, first of all, give greater consideration to advice that comes from people who are where you want to be. And I know I've said this before. If you're participating in a forum or a group discussion and you're getting conflicting advice, don't be afraid to look these people up and see who's selling books and who isn't. Start to learn and understand what the Amazon rankings mean. And I know that those are not the end-all be-all, but in a nutshell, if somebody has a book that's at a ranking of 100,000 on Amazon US, and it generally stays there, that means they're selling a book a day. If they're around 40 to 50 and they're sticking there, that means they're selling two books a day. 20,000, they're selling five or six. 10,000 ranking means they're selling 10 to 12. When you get up to a ranking of 1,000, that's about 100 books being sold a day. And a ranking of 100 is right about 1,000 a day. And those are units sold, regardless of price. If they're in Kindle Unlimited, those borrows do affect their rankings. I don't know exactly how that works compared to the gross sales, but you can get the idea pretty quickly of who's actually selling and who is not. And don't let people say, you can't go by Amazon rankings because they change so much. They can go a long time without selling a book, and then you sell one and it jumps up. If a book has not been selling and it sells one, it will almost always jump up to about the 100,000s for whatever reason. But that's as far as it goes. The volatility comes with people who are not selling for jack. The people who are consistently staying in those higher rankings, they are selling steadily. So don't believe that you can't learn from author rankings at all. Just remember that, again, if somebody's selling 100,000 and staying there, they're selling about 30 books a month. And if they're below that, they're really not selling much at all. And so consider that. That's not to say that people who aren't selling don't have advice that's worthwhile, but if their advice, particularly with marketing and strategies, conflicts with someone who is actually selling books, take that into consideration. Ask yourself, does the person who is giving advice share my goals? If you've been listening to this podcast and you haven't given up and quit, you're probably sharing my goal of commercial success and selling books. So if there's somebody who's giving you advice who is really more into the art of it, they want to write well-crafted books, they're more literary, that's a valid choice, as we've discussed before, but they're probably not going to be able to help you sell books because they're not going to use a lot of the strategies you do. When it comes to business decisions, like we said earlier in regard to book covers, take the advice mostly of indies who have made it on their own, because it's possible that somebody who's with a publisher, their publisher is helping drive sales even if the strategies aren't great. Maybe the author has a name which drives sales. Maybe the author writes for a publishing house that has a great mailing list for their niche and their subgenre. So all of those things can impact sales. So if somebody like that tells you, hey, I don't worry about branding, I don't worry about marketing, yeah, that might not necessarily be pertinent to you because they have the benefit of someone else's marketing expertise driving their sales. Big one, before you hand money over to people giving workshops, people selling advice, first of all, see if that same type of advice is available for free on the web, because it probably is, in the form of podcasts, maybe free books, things like that. See if that person is making their money on fiction sales or if they're making that money selling advice to other writers. That's a biggie. And then beware if the person says, I do make money on fiction, but it's under a super secret pen name that I'm not going to tell you anything about. There's a chance that's true, but it's probably not. If their actual name is not selling, not as likely that they're making money. Just, you know, beware of people who are selling advice rather than selling fiction. They need to have a track record of actual indie published fiction sales. Somebody who used to be trad-pubbed and has now declared themselves an expert might have some good things to teach you about the craft and things like that. It's unlikely or not as likely that they're going to have as much to say about indie sales. Another thing to consider, don't believe every conspiracy thing that you read about indie publishing, especially when it comes to Amazon and algorithms. I could go on all day about the stuff that people post where they're just certain that Amazon is suppressing them personally, blah, blah, blah. There's always something new about somebody's changed the algorithms because my sales fell. And you look and the person's gone from 5 sales to 2 or something like that. Things that could be normal variations in sales patterns. So don't panic. Don't believe all the conspiracy theories. Another thing to consider, it is not all about luck. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time debating how much luck plays a factor. I don't think that's productive. I'm just going to say this. The harder I work, the luckier I get. And that's true with a lot of people I know. There are no guarantees, as we said at the outset. Focus on what's within your control, and by using these best practices and learning from successful indies, it might not guarantee your success, but it's going to give you a much better chance. Now, some considerations for your publishing and your writing. Be productive. Producing regular content is essential for indie success. The longer you go between new releases, the sharper your decline in sales is going to be. So try to put out books as regularly as you can. Consider novellas. It's a great length for story writing, and I find that my novellas sell almost as well as my full-length books. And I do get the occasional, oh, I can't believe I paid $2.99 for this short story on a 35,000-word novella. But for the most part, we don't get many of those. And as long as you price accordingly and you're not gouging people, people are fine with novellas. A lot of people prefer them because it's like what Patterson is trying to do now that he's pretending that he invented novellas. But give the people who want a short, quick read what they want. So do consider that. If that'll help you get out more books, consider writing novellas. And then when your series is done, you can bundle them into a set and sell that in addition to the individuals. It's a great strategy for producing and maintaining interest in your work. Short stories, they have some uses that we can talk about another time, but basically those aren't going to be as effective for maintaining interest in your work as regular novellas and novels are going to be. Consider writing a series. That tends to be much more effective than putting out a variety of disconnected works. There will be some people who disagree, but on the whole, the people who are making a living, or better, are writing in series. And I think the reasons for that are self-evident. People get hooked into a particular set of characters, and they want more. Because, like I said, we're talking about mass-market audiences who want their literary comfort food. They want more of the same of what they enjoyed. So give them that. And, you know, write your series in a commercial genre. That's going to be important as well. And though, like we talked about, find the genre that seems to have some potential and write there. I've found that with my series, they do pretty well. My orphan books, they sell almost nothing. And by orphan, I mean the ones where I've just written a single book. And I think they're pretty good books. I've got a humorous paranormal zombie apocalypse book that I think is very good and a lot of fun. And the people who've actually read it, some are deeply offended, find it anti-religious. Some are deeply offended because they think it's too religious. But for the most part, most people really enjoyed it and thought it was funny. I've got a YA paranormal humorous book called You Suck that's about murder on the set of a reality show where vampires are competing to be the one to bite the teen pop star. It basically sends up Survivor and The Bachelor, and at the time I wrote it, Hannah Montana was big. I think it's one of my better books. And again, people who actually read it like it, but not many have taken a chance on it. I have a horror novel written with Alan Baxter called Dark Ride that's only sold a few thousand copies. If I put out a Dane Maddock book that only sold a few thousand in the first week, I'd be bitterly disappointed. But, you know, people don't want to move too far away from the genre in which they know me and from the series that they love. So, again, series gives you your better chance of selling well. And one of the great things is whenever you put out a new book in the series, it tends to lift the sales of your entire back catalog. People who have never seen you before suddenly see this new book, and they go, whoa, there's a whole series here. Let me go back and try this one. So especially book one will sell pretty well when you put out a series. So each book in that series becomes a marketing tool for the others. You run a discount sale or a book butt promotion or anything on any book in that series, it helps the sales of the others, particularly the ones that come prior to it. And then you can also do book bundles of these series that tend to sell pretty well. And don't believe in the old publishing wisdom that a lot of traditional publishers still cling to, if not most or all, that an author's books compete with one another. That's baloney. The opposite is actually true for the reason I just said. One new book lifts another. And there are some indies who have found they can put out a book a month and it doesn't hurt their sales because people like their work and it doesn't take all that long to read a book. And I'm not saying that you need to make one book a month be your model, but just the understanding that I don't think you can be too productive as long as you're writing good stories and, you know, putting out a good product. And the last thing I want to encourage you to do is when you're making your decisions, consider your own consumer behavior, especially when we're talking marketing and you're going to start spending money on something. Before you spend money or time on any given strategy, ask yourself, has this particular strategy regularly or even ever motivated me to buy a given book? I'm going to tell you some things that have never persuaded me to buy a book. Bookmarks. When you're, let's say you're selling, trying to hand sell books at a convention or something, bookmarks and postcards and things like that, those are polite excuses for someone to say no to your book. I don't know how many times I've seen somebody engage a person, talk to them about their book. The person seems kind of interested, but they've got a limited amount of money. So out of politeness, or maybe out of some level of interest, they say, well, I'll take this postcard or business card or whatever. And I'll order it online, and then it never happens. But I can say I've many, many times taken a bookmark, any kind of swag, the stuff we all get, out of politeness with no intention of ever going back and ordering the book. Or maybe I really did think I might, but I don't think I've ever followed through. And often, you know, you walk around at a con and you'll see that a lot of these bookmarks and other giveaways have been thrown in the trash or left on a table. People didn't want to be rude, so they took it. So I do keep my business cards with me when I do signings, but I don't do the other promo stuff. Book trailers. I have never bought a book in response to a book trailer. Some of them are fun, cool little things to look at. Most of them suck, but I am not a big believer in investing money in a book trailer. I don't think it sells. TV and radio appearances and print ads and magazines and things like that, no. Time and again, I have also, not only has it not motivated me to buy a book, but I know people who have spent a lot of money and didn't get any kind of result. A Facebook ad that proclaims that a given author is better than, insert author name there. And where this came from is early on in Mark Dawson's Facebook ad advice he was giving. This was one of the examples he used. And there are a lot of people out there who are very literal and they copy things word for word. And, you know, you might be like me and have seen a whole slew of these Facebook ads that are exactly alike. Better than Clive Cussler. Better than Robert Jordan. That's an automatic no for me because that just makes me roll my eyes. Some people might disagree. Now, here are some things that have persuaded me to buy a book. A recommendation from a friend who shares my reading tastes. That's a biggie. That's why you write good books. That's why you cultivate relationships with readers, so they'll want to spread the word about your work. Sharp-looking book cover. I don't know how many book series I discovered because I was sold when I saw the book. The Robert Jordan series, Wheel of Time, I was browsing through fantasy, just looking for something. I saw the cover, and I bought it. I don't know if I even read the back. And it became one of my all-time favorites, despite some of the problems it had later on. And it was all because I loved the cover. Serpent by Clive Cussler and Paul Kamprickas is one of my favorite Cussler books. And I just loved the cover. It was amazing. And so, good cover. For me, that'll sell me quite often. Sometimes there'll be a great cover, and I decide it's still not for me, but I'm definitely going to click on that product page or pick it up off the shelf if I love the book cover. Finding the books in the also bots of my favorite authors, that's a big way that I discover new readers. I go to Amazon, I go to an author I love, and I click through, and I try to find some other authors that way. And that's only going to happen if you're selling books to readers in that genre, subgenre. So following the advice we've talked about is important. Or finding the book on bestseller lists of some of my favorite genres. So I know this has been a long episode. I appreciate you listening. And honestly, we could probably go on and on about best practices. These are the broad strokes, but I hope there was some value to you, and we will see you next time.